Look at what happens to your bank account once this crazy election is finally over. For Marketplace in New York, I'm Mark Garrison, in for David Brancaccio. The final presidential debate is tonight. We are in the middle of earnings seasons. We want to take a look and see what all this means for the bigger picture. Let's do that with Susan Schmidt, portfolio manager at Westwood Holdings Group in Dallas. Susan, how's all this stuff playing out?
I think the market's relatively okay with earnings so far. We're still very early into the earnings season, and so we've had some good numbers, some bad numbers come out. The market's handling it pretty calmly. Nothing's been a super outsized result, so no cause for panic yet. And I think the market's really being influenced by larger factors. They're very concerned about what's going on with quantitative easing and stimulus in Europe. China seems to have stabilized, but domestically here, as you mentioned, we have a big debate tonight. Everyone's wondering what happens with the election. And the majority of the market still thinks that the Fed will go ahead with a small increase in interest rates in their December meeting.
So that's the Fed, which does monetary policy. The other thing that we talk about is fiscal policy, taxing and spending, what the politicians do, or at least what they're supposed to do when it's not gridlocked. How might that play out in 2017, depending on who wins the White House, who has control of the Houses of Congress?
Well, it has been really difficult to see fiscal policy get engaged in monetary policy, which is the Fed, can't do it all. We had some comments yesterday from Senator Schumer out of New York that were interesting, and he seemed to imply that an area where people could perhaps come to agreement, both Democrats and Republicans, would be in tax reform and then a stimulus package here in the United States, which would be great. That, I think, the market would take great comfort in. That's exactly what they're looking for. And the thought that hopefully whoever wins the election, there'll be some ability to find common ground and get something done in the near term is going to be a big positive for the market as well.
And what might common ground mean? I mean, infrastructure comes up a lot. Both of the presidential candidates have talked about that, maybe some big spending on roads and bridges, that kind of thing. What form might that take?
I think the nuts and bolts, the transport system is in dire need of help. And so that's an easy place to start. And that puts people to work. It has a lot of infrastructure projects, think big construction, capital equipment spends, where we're really helping to build out the transportation infrastructure. And that then helps commerce because things can travel more easily. And more importantly, it gets money flowing and circulating because it gets people back in the workforce.
Okay, Susan Schmidt, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Hundreds of Jim Beam employees are now on strike, saying booming demand for bourbon has them overworked. Marketplace's Adam Allington is following the clash. Adam, these kinds of fights generally revolve around pay and working conditions. What's at issue here?
The simple answer is all of the above. Workers rejected a new contract offer last Friday, which included wage increases along with a few other concessions. But workers may feel like they have more leverage, because here's the thing. Bourbon is huge right now. Sales of bourbon and Tennessee whiskey were up about 8% last year. Millennials are a big part of that. Probably the biggest issue, however, is that workers at these two Beam plants say they're so understaffed that they're working 60 to 80 hours a week. Traditionally, there's a seasonal aspect to whiskey production, so demand drops off a bit, but the union is saying that's not happening, and the company needs to get busy hiring more permanent staff. Until the strike ends, Jim Beam officials say they'll carry out contingency plans to keep operations running at the two plants.
And contract talks between management and labor have resumed. Marketplace's Adam Allington, thanks. The idea of a gap year between high school and college is increasingly popular for young people fortunate enough to afford it. Time for travel, volunteering, or working is ideally supposed to give them time off to mature, get more out of college when they actually do start. One fan of the gap year is New York Times columnist Ron Lieber. He wrote a book on this called Taking Time Off in 1996. Now he's checking in with the students to see how it all worked out for him. Here's Ron talking about it with David Brancaccio.
So you write this book in 1996, but now it's 20 years later, and you've gone back to check on their progress. What'd you find? A bunch of ne'er-do-wells, layabouts, and wastrels?
Well, the theory, the thesis had always been that people who take time off tend to get better grades than people who don't, and people who take time off also get better jobs afterwards. But what I really wanted to find out was 20 years later, now that most of these people were middle-aged, did their time off somehow put them on a trajectory for the life that they wanted to live? And many of them told me stories now that they're in their 40s about how that came to pass, about how they found the thing that they were passionate about in their life and ended up pursuing it.
Yeah, you correlate this with a sense of passion. If you can develop some passion for a course in life, it presumably increases your chances of being successful.
I think it does. I mean, you hear the adage all the time that you sort of do what you love and the money will follow. And many of the people I profiled didn't end up being filthy rich, right? But so many of them found the work that they were born to do. Ted Conover took a year off to ride freight trains with hobos, and he came back to college. He wrote his thesis about them, and he realized he had a knack for telling stories. Today, Ted is a successful writer, author, journalist, a journalism professor, and it was all because he had the guts to take that year and do something different.
So this gap year, the parental fear, besides the cost, is that the person will get sidetracked. A job or the flow of life will get their hooks into the person, and they'll end up blowing off college.
That is often a concern, and it can be a particular concern for first-generation college students where, you know, this might be your one track at getting to college and staying there. But I spoke to Celia Quezada about this. She took a year on a Rotary scholarship and studied and lived in Belgium. And her perspective on that was the opposite. If she had gone to Williams College straight from high school at 18, she feels like she would have drowned there without this sort of practice year of being away from home and learning what she was about.
But the gap year has its costs, right? I mean, parents may have to support the young man or woman as they go find themselves in this odyssey.
There are all sorts of ways to have a revenue-neutral gap year. If your parents are willing to put you up for another year, you can work for 9 months, make a bunch of money, and take that money and spend it on traveling. You can be in AmeriCorps or any one of a number of service programs that are designed to pay you just enough for your living expenses and allow you to come out even or maybe even a little ahead at the end of the year.
New York Times Your Money columnist Ron Lieber in conversation with David Brancaccio. And finally, Amazon is rolling out a big new weapon in its bid to dominate streaming music, Garth Brooks. Him being on Amazon Music Unlimited is a pretty big deal, even if you're not a fan of country or Garth. That's because at nearly 150 million albums sold, he's one of the biggest stars who has consistently kept his music off the big streaming services. I'm Mark Garrison with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.